I think that's why I find Third Cheese World so interesting, because I think you could never stop learning and you'll continuously make mistakes, basically. It's never always going to go right, and you can always adjust and learn, and because it's a living thing and it's part of nature and with the microbiology and whatnot, you have to keep learning, I think.
Today on Dirty Linen, we are talking to pastry chef Lucy Whitlow. Lucy is the New Zealand-born pastry chef at Osteria Ilaria in Melbourne. Today, we find her outside of Melbourne doing something very special and exciting. Lucy, welcome to Dirty Linen.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
I'm so excited to have you here. Tell us what you've been doing today.
Learning a lot more about science than I thought I would be. I'm at the cheese school in Castlemaine with Long Paddock Cheese and Ivan Larker, which is pretty exciting because he's amazing, and Australia has finally managed to catch him for a while to set up a cheese school, and Australia hasn't seen a cheese school like this before, so I feel pretty privileged to be here.
It is so exciting that there's this wonderful cheese school that's just opened in Castlemaine, initially for professionals looking to understand more about cheese making, but there will be classes for just cheese nerds and general cheese lovers, any worshippers at the Church of Cheeses. What sort of science have you been learning about today, Lucy?
Yeah, huge amount about just about milk mainly, and the makeup of milk and the million different things that are happening inside it with fat and proteins and all the different variants and with different animals and how it changes your cheese, which is, it's far more complicated than I was expecting.
Oh, so interesting. It's so interesting, you know, obviously people have been making cheese for thousands of years, but to look at it from that point of view, there's so many different ways you can look at it. You know, some people just, you know, have grown up making cheese, or they've learned how to make cheese from their grandma or something. And then there's this whole, you know, you can get this whole scientific layer to your understanding as well. And I suppose we're always learning more about that side of it.
For me, learning about it now after having starting to go so natural with my cheese making and feeling like I'm beginning to understand what I'm doing, learning now about the science is kind of awesome because it's putting all the dots together a little bit. So I think what they're doing there at the cheese school with Ivan Larker is amazing.
Yeah, we're so lucky to have that resource, and opens up so many possibilities for artisan cheese in Australia. So very exciting. And you're there for the whole week learning about cheese, am I right?
Yeah, so cool.
It's so lucky. So not every pastry chef geeks out on cheese, Lucy. So tell us a bit about your path and to becoming a chef and a pastry chef and also a cheese freak.
I actually went to a design school to do fashion design, and then I didn't really want to go to uni. I just wanted to stay home and bake. And I made a collection of clothes based on the pattern that a whisk made, because I just wanted to stay home and cook and not. The collection was great, and I put all these tiny women inside a little oven that I had made, but. Yeah, I was like, oh, I should probably be in food. Not really meant to be in the fashion industry, I think. So then went and did a baking apprenticeship, and I think so much of the fermentation with sourdough and stuff, learning about cheese now, they go side by side pretty much.
Yeah, right. You grew up in New Zealand. Did you train over there as well before you moved over to Australia?
Yeah. So did an apprenticeship there, and then have kind of been the baker inside restaurants for quite a while. And then that sort of progressed into more of a pastry role. And then came over to Melbourne, and I don't think I'm going to leave, to be honest. It's pretty pretty cool here.
Well, good. If anyone that can say Melbourne's cool after 2020 is definitely a Melburnian. So, yeah, you've got to stay now. What's it like at Osteria Ilaria? Like, what is your focus there? What kind of pastry do you do?
So I get to, like, work with everyone and come up with a lot of the desserts. So having that creative side is awesome. But, yeah, playing with different flavours and different ferments to take normal pastries and just make them a little bit more interesting.
What's an example of something that you're really excited about at the moment?
I've got a koji meringue on at the moment, a twirl using roasted, I've inoculated rice with koji spores and grown that, and then which takes on this beautiful floral, really floral, slightly malty flavour once it's toasted, and roasting off the inoculated rice that's had been inoculated with koji spores and grown. Which is cool also because you don't have to use any sugar or anything to make, like, bring in new flavours. The koji sweetens it much more than you'd ever expect. So to be able to use that sort of stuff in desserts is, for me, exciting. Yeah.
That's so cool. So the reason that I connected with you is that we were at the same milk event, a dairy expose out at Gippsland Jersey, where the remarkable Sally Jones, founder of Gippsland Jersey, hosted a bunch of people from Melbourne, mostly baristas, so they would learn more about where their milk came from. And, you know, we were chatting after that and I started learning a little bit more about you and some of your projects through 2020. Can you talk about what kind of great Melbourne lockdown experiences you had?
I guess I made the most of it. It gave me so much time, which I'm very grateful for. I thought to myself, like, you know, there's not many times in your life where you have this, you just have to stop and focus on other things. And for me, that was definitely like being creative. And I had been doing like life drawing classes at No Vacancy Gallery before lockdown. I was missing that a bit, so decided to make galleries in my house instead. More just so I could get dressed up and wear fur coats and by myself. it was pretty fun. And I, at the time, was living in this gorgeous church style warehouse. I'd turn it into exhibitions. Did a few of those. Bought a pottery wheel. Did some pottery. Made cheese every day. It was pretty special.
So I just need to understand a little bit more about this. So you were living in this churchy warehouse space. You set up, you created art and then exhibited it as though you were in a gallery. You dressed up for your own art openings. And were you the only attendee?
Yeah. Yeah. As I'd put them online just on my Instagram, and it was a project for me to be creative at home. And then by the time I ended up doing three during lockdown, and by the time the third one came, you could actually have visitors over. So my neighbours all turned up, which was really cool. It was fun having like people in the space to like talk about the art and whatnot. And then I've just done another one in my house, which now you can have lots of people over. So it was really cool to set up a exhibition and have lots of people over and talk about the art and challenge thinking about different projects and whatnot.
I just cannot love more the vision of you in a fur coat at your own art exhibition by yourself.
Yeah. Well, that's why I had to have a second exhibition, because I have two. I have a blue fur coat as well, so I was like, oh, I've got to plan another night for myself.
Wow, inspiration strikes in many ways. And it, you know, learning now that you studied fashion and that you had, you know, created this, what sounds like an extraordinary suite of clothing inspired by whisks, it does sort of make a little bit more sense to me that you've got this history of connecting art and food. So tell us about the art that you created.
The last exhibition I did was, I called it Invisible, and it was me wanting to challenge the stock standard portraits of chefs and with your arms crossed, and what that body language is like projecting within the culture, which for me is a barrier between themselves and at times the people around them, while trying to maintain this like projection of toughness. Yeah, so I made silhouettes instead of the chefs, and behind the silhouette you could look in and see inside the silhouette the different vices and side effects of maintaining that projection. So
that's so powerful. Like, yeah, what kinds of things could you see inside these chefs?
There was, yeah, a lot to do with health. So like your heart, lungs. I put liver, ovaries, and that's not just the physical effect. That's also a representation of different things. So like for your heart, at times it's you're maintaining your relationships, which is definitely takes a toll for a lot of people, and ovaries in there for the balance of family life and trying to maintain both, while at times the industry expects you to maintain toughness. Yeah, and for me as well, the choices of like, when do I want to have kids and things like that. Yeah.
Had those things been, was that stuff you were thinking about already, or was it that time away from the kitchen in lockdown that allowed, you know, these sort of subconscious thoughts to bubble to the surface, or allowed you to really focus on those things?
I think at like times it's a constant tone. Yeah, definitely having all that time away from the kitchen, I think for a lot of people gave you a little bit more balance, a little bit too much balance almost.
Yeah, to me it's such a powerful series of artworks, and I've only seen them, you know, in little versions on your Instagram, but I love them, Lucy. I just think it is such a stock standard cliche of the chef, you know, that strong pose with arms crossed looking, you know, defiantly at the camera. And it's just, it's so interesting to pick it apart and to think about all the things that those crossed arms are a barrier to. I guess both sort of emotionally within that person, but also structurally in the industry around them that they're sort of embedded in. And then there's that media gaze that asks somebody to be that person. It's, it's really thought provoking.
I think, yeah, exactly. It's like, cross your arms, I'm a chef, but what does that mean? And why is that an expectation of people?
And why should a chef be invincible?
Yeah, exactly. Not at all. If every chef stood with their arms behind and their heart and chest exposed to the camera, would that instead project, I don't know, just say something else to me?
Well, I think it would definitely say something else. It's hard to know what the, you know, implications would be or the consequences, whether that would mean any kind of change, but images are so powerful. So I feel like, yeah, there must be some kind of change that would flow from that. Have you been in a position where you've been photographed and you've been asked to strike that pose?
I was photographed recently at work, and Yeah, no one asked me to strike that pose, I think.
Lucy, tell us about one of your other exhibitions, the one that you wore the other fur coat for.
I did one called MTV Crobes, which was a take on MTV Cribs. And it was on cheese, actually, and the microbiology in cheese. Which was real cool. So I drew what the cheese looks like normally from the outside, and then in glow-in-the-dark pens, I drew all the microbes and the, like, magical world that's going on behind it. So it's like a two-part, here's the art, but then turn it off and it comes alive exhibition. Yeah, so that was pretty fun. It was cool to, like, see it all come together, and because they're both the outside and the microbes are just as beautiful as each other, so it was real cool to see it all happen. Yeah,
that's really amazing, and it makes me think of cheese and the fact that it's so alive. And you know, when you're by yourself in a house in lockdown with cheese, I mean, did you feel like you were never really alone?
Yeah, kind of. So they were like, yeah, they were my children basically in cheese. I had something to care for and tend to every day. So,
what is it that you love so much about cheese?
It's alive, pretty much. Yeah, it's yeah, you make this thing and then you watch it grow and it changes significantly. But there's also so many variants within that, and learning about, like, natural cheese making and what you can do within that using natural cultures and whatnot is incredible. That's definitely a magical world of things growing in the way that they're supposed to.
And do you feel like you were able to go a lot sort of deeper and broader into that world because you had this enforced break from the kitchen?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, there's not many. Yeah, you need time with cheese and days and weeks in a row to, like, properly invest in it and figure out what it's doing. It was. Yeah, a special time of being able to put my energy into that.
It's so great to hear of people that were able to make the most of that really crazy time. When you look back on it, and I mean, I suppose we can say we're looking back on something. Who's to know what's in front of us exactly? But when you look back on it, how do you sort of compute it in general?
Really lucky. Yeah. Just really, really lucky to be in a position where I was able to do all these great things and have the space, the time, and energy to do it. It was not the same for a lot of people, and around the world it's still going. So I just feel really lucky and privileged to have had that opportunity and made the most of it.
And do you feel like you've come out the other side of it changed?
Kind of. Not changed, just feel a little bit more inspired, I suppose, into the different things that I can do, and was able to, push my own thinking throughout that time, which is, was cool.
And tell us what you're doing in a few weeks at Congress.
So Congress is doing a series called In Good Company, where they're doing events on Sundays with different chefs, which, is going to be great. They always do put on fantastic events and do great food. So I'm friends with and used to work with Zachary Tinsley, who's the head chef at Congress. So we're going to celebrate our cheese learning, basically, and do an event celebrating that and bringing along our cheeses and cooking with them. So the whole menu is using and highlighting different versions of cheese or cheese making in some way, but also talking about the wanting to discuss cheese making itself and the natural world and the dairy industry. So yeah, it's going to be a pretty fun event with hopefully some really good food.
That sounds great. So Congress is a restaurant in Collingwood. And as you say, they're always doing interesting things there, big wine focus. So I guess that's another, you know, I guess there's always a thread of fermentation running through things that happened there. So cheese certainly fits in very well. What do you think you're going to get out of the rest of this week in Castlemaine, Lucy?
A lot for how to basically take what I know so far, expand on that, but also put it into a situation that I'm hopefully able to make some really good cheeses and have people eat them and share with them with people more than what I'm able to do at the moment. And learning how to better use all the skills that I've picked up.
That's so exciting. Everything. Learning is, I think with cheese, I imagine you'd always feel like there was more to learn. You'd never really have it nailed.
Oh, 100%. I think that's why I find the cheese world so interesting, because I think you could never stop learning and you'll continuously make mistakes, basically. I imagine that experienced cheesemakers are like around the world. There's so many variables that it's never always going to go right, and you can always adjust and learn. And because it's a living thing and it's part of nature and with the microbiology and whatnot, you have to keep learning, I think.
It's really interesting, you know, like pastry chefs. The world of pastry is so often about precision and consistency and things always being the same, you know, down to the millimeter and down to the gram. Whereas the world of cheese and naturally leavened baking is so responsive and so different. Do you feel like you're sort of bringing more of that responsive style to your pastry than people would think of as traditionally there in the pastry chef world?
For me, I reckon that's where all the flavour is, like in the natural scenario, and using fire and fermenting things and taking it back to nature and not trying to force flavors or shapes out of things that weren't meant to be that way. I reckon personally, I think it's a world of much, much more exciting and full of flavor. So hopefully, I don't know.
It's really interesting. It's really my mind is sort of bending as I'm trying to think about it. But I think it's a really interesting approach to pastry. And I feel like it's also gonna make menus really flow from savory to the sweeter end of things, or from the beginning of a meal to the end of things, if it is more, there's not such a sharp line between one and the other.
For me, there's so much flavor and wastage. Like, for instance, all the gnocchi skins, there's all the flavors in the skin for me, and potatoes, and gnocchi is made, like the potatoes are mashed most days between Tipo and Ilaria. So taking that and roasting it and turning it into an ice cream, it's not only like not throwing food out, but someone else did half my prep for me, which is pretty sick. They already mashed their potatoes. I just picked them up and put them in the oven. I'm like, thanks, mate. This is quite good.
I love that. That's so good.
Yeah. It's saved me time, and I've got more flavour, so I'm quite happy.
Yeah, and you've got this really interesting element to what you're doing.
Yeah.
That's very cool. What's another supposedly waste product that you've found a better use for?
We've been making different vinegars just from the pulps, like the pulp from juicing things. So trying to do some honey with it. It's more of an infusion than a proper honey, but I chucked on the other day, like all the, we're using some pumpkin juice. For these amazing dishes that Steph does. But take that pulp, which has already been juiced, it's still this awesome ingredient that has all this flavour in it. So chuck that in a jar with some honey and a bit of salt and let it ferment and turn it into its own honey. Or the same with different, like all the spent vanilla pods, chucking that into vinegars at the moment. I'm trying to get a nukazaki going at the moment with all the leftover coffee grounds, which is a Japanese fermentation method. But I think I need to do a little bit more reading, maybe. It'll be all right. I'll work it out.
Wow. Well, we chatted to Joe Barrett who's at Future Food System recently about the mushrooms that they're growing there in coffee grounds. So that's something I want to try at home. But, yeah, it's very exciting to think about repurposing things that would otherwise be composted or thrown away. It's very exciting. Lucy, you said you're really happy to be in Melbourne and, you know, feel like this is the place. But you're right in the centre of the city, which is still, well, it's yet to recover. How do you think things are feeling there and how optimistic are you feeling?
Feeling really good. Melbourne in the last month, definitely, it feels alive. I was trying to get from one part of the city to the other in an Uber the other day. It took forever, which was kind of a nice situation to be in, I guess, that you're starting to consider traffic again. It's like we really should be so lucky that that's a problem.
It's so true. I celebrated my first Punt Road traffic jam as well.
Did you?
Ooh. Yeah. I was like, oh, I hate Punt Road, but I'll like it this time.
Like at Ilaria and Tiho, we're full flight again pretty much, which is awesome. Yeah, it's cool to see everyone out and about, and it's cool to have people back up on the kitchen bar interacting with staff, and yeah, just feels alive, which is nice.
So good to hear. Lucy, I'm really excited by the way that you're interweaving art and cooking. It's been so great to have a chat to you and learn more about it. Have you got another art project that you're working on?
Not at the moment. Mainly just been focusing on the cheese stuff for a bit, getting back in tune with my curds. And then, I'm sure I do like having something to look forward to and plan. So sometime soon I'll do something else.
Brilliant. Well, enjoy the rest of the week at the Cheese School. It's been an absolute pleasure to chat to you, and do let us know about your next art exhibition. I'll whack on a fur coat and be delighted to be one of the viewers. Thank you so much for chatting.
No, thank you for having me.
This is Dirty Linen, and I'm Danny Vallant. We air the issues that the hospitality industry finds hard to talk about. We spend a week thrashing around each issue, hearing from different people with unique perspectives. We want to hear from you as well. If you have something that needs to be said about a topic, get in touch so we can include your perspective. Contact us at dirtylinen@deepintheweeds.com.au or hit us up on Insta @DirtyLinen Podcast. We can't wait to hear from you. This.